It's Mom Zone. Breaking news, the Fremont family declares where they're going for back to school.
The Fremonts are going with Academy.
Mrs. Fremont, why Academy over another store?
When my kids say they'll never use math in the real world, I just show them how low my Academy receipt is.
Do you have any other thoughts?
Look, back to school is a numbers game, and numbers don't lie.
Nobody starts your season with better brands and lower prices than Academy. Academy Sports and Outdoors. For all, for less. Price match guarantee details at academy.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I'm fantastic. I got to spend some time with my son and his wife and my grandson over the weekend in Washington, D.C. That was great. You know what, though? This is one of the most jam-packed shows we're going to have all year. As the season is winding down quickly on the PGA Tour, injuries are still an issue. Guys are having babies, and the final major, plus the FedEx Cup playoffs, which is with its $65 million or close by. There's so many storylines at the PGA Championship this week, and we're going to talk about all of them. Golfaholics will not want to miss this show, so they better be tuning in. So tonight, Carlos, IK Kim wins a major in Scotland, plus the captains fill out their Solheim Cup teams, and there are some surprises. Hideki Matsuyama got it done in Akron. Paul Goitis proves he can still play a little at the 3M in Minnesota. Plus the final major of the year on the men's tour, the PGA Championship, is this week. I don't know how we're going to fit it all in tonight, Carlos. Let's get to it. Let's go.
I set it up for 2 hours. Hopefully we'll get it done by then. I mean, otherwise I'll start to get hungry, and we're going to have to cut the show short anyway.
I might fall asleep, you know, at my bedtime before that.
It's so. Past your bedtime, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. One thing though, I want to give a big shout out to Kieran Clark there in Scotland. I know that expect Kieran to be here because it's major week, but he had some previous arrangements, so he couldn't be here. But I know that he was dying
He dumped us.
No, man, he did, and he wasn't able to. Big shout out to Big Kieran Clark, the European golf guru. I know he's going to be enjoying this week. But Fred, the LPGA Ladies European Tour had a major going on last week. What happened there at the Ricoh Women's British Open?
Well, the biggest story coming out of Scotland last week was redemption for IK Kim after the debacle that befell her in the 2012 Dinah Shore before it was the A&E inspiration. There had to be a ton of demons in Kim's psyche, but she took control and played magnificently to capture her first major title. Kim has been working with mental coaches to remain calm on the course, accept the outcomes, and erase the demons of majors past. This time, there was no drama at the 72nd hole. A final round 71 left her two shots clear of Jody Yurt-Shadoff, who tried to catch Kim with a final round 64, but it was not enough. We talked to Jody Yurt-Shadoff as a Solheim Cup candidate, and boy, she kind of locked herself into that thing. Kings Barnes also plays second fiddle to its nearby historic neighbor, St. Andrews, but once again comes up big. The views and the comments from the players were all positive. Watching it on TV was amazing. I want to go to St. Andrews as much as to see Kings Barnes as I do the old course cars. I got to get there. Michelle Wee's low round on Thursday was great. She fired a first round, 800 par 64, but then followed that by an ugly 76, and then went 69-66 on the weekend to finish T3. It was overall a good tournament for Wee, but the 76 on Friday just killed her. You know how I told you a couple years ago she had the best swing in golf? Well, now she has one of the worst. What is this early set with the hands, the wide stance? Oh, my goodness. She is playing around too much. She's like Tiger Woods of women. Just, you had a beautiful swing. You were perfect. Why are you changing stuff? It may work for her. I hope it does. We all want to see Michelle Wee continue to play well in the LPGA Tour, but it just doesn't look like a swing that's going to hold up under pressure. I don't know. Maybe she'll prove us wrong. I've been looking at golf swings for a long time, Carlos, and it sure doesn't look like something I would recommend. Georgia Hall, who was the leading Solheim points earner for the Ladies European Tour, was also T3. Her first two rounds of 68-67 are right in the thick of things. A pair of 70s on the weekend left her tied with Carolyn Masson and Wee for third. A positive from the women's British was that American women earned four of the top 11 spots. Along with Michelle's tied for third, Stacey Lewis was T7, Lexi Thompson and Angel Yin were T11. Surprise! Paula Creamer finished T16. Well, it wasn't enough to get her the initial Solheim Cup nod, but we're going to talk about that later. 19-year-old Englishwoman Sophie Lamb posted rounds of 69, 71, 73, 69. This is an amateur now, to finish T30 and earn the silver salver for the low amateur honors. She nipped Leona McGuire by three shots. That day I got to talk to, I was watching Leona McGuire hit balls on the range when the ladies were here for the Marathon Classic, and I sat down on a chair there, and it was late sitting, and we struck up a conversation. It was Leona's mother, and she lives in Ireland, and she doesn't get to come very often to see Leona play because Leona's at Duke, but she and her husband are the school teachers in Ireland, and so she had the summer off, so she came over to watch Leona play a little bit, and we had a wonderful chat, and nice lady. So I'll leave with that, Carlos. I know you want to talk about Solheim Cup a little bit or something.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Solheim Cup then now. The teams for the Solheim Cup next month have been announced. Jody Warshadov, she booked her place in Team Europe with a runner-up finish there at the Rico Women's British Open, while Charlie Hall, Mel Reed, and Susan Peterson all had qualified automatically. U.S. Captain Julie Inster, she made some bold choices, let me call it that way. Looking past Paula Creamer, Morgan Pressel, and Angela Stanford, who have made 17 Solheim Cup appearances between them. Instead, Inkster went for LPGA Tour rookie Angel Jin and 25-year-old Austin Ernest, who won her only LPGA title in August in 2014. Yeah, it was on a playoff over IK Kim. We'll see about that. Anyway, the 10 automatic qualifiers included world number 2 Lexi Thompson, 2014 U.S. Women's Open champion Michelle Wee, 8-time Solheim Cup player Christy Kerr, and 2-time major winner Stacey Lewis. Europe's Solheim Cup team captain Annika Sorensen. She believes the weight has been lifted from her team after a fine collective performance in the Rico Women's British Open at Kings Barnes. She was one of 3 members of Sorensen's side to finish in the top 3 as 21-year-old Georgia Hall from Bournemouth and Germany's Caroline Masson finished tied for third. The Solheim Cup, as you all know, is going to take place in Des Moines, Iowa next week, and the 2 teams were finalized after proceedings in Scotland. Sorensen leaned heavily on youth for her picks in selecting little-known rookies Madeline Sackstrom from Sweden and Emily K. Peterson from Denmark. They will take their place in a team that is featuring no fewer than 5 players from England. Alongside Hall and Warshadov will be Charlie Hall, Mel Reed, and Florentina Barker. Sorensen needed a strong showing from her team there to instill confidence and duly got it. For both Warshadov and Hall, it was comfortably their best finish in a major, and they can now look forward to their Solheim Cup debuts. Her American counterpart, Julie Inkster, also went with youth. I mean, the home team will be led, like I said, by formidable Lexi Thompson. But one piece of news that happened yesterday was that Julie Inkster announced that Paula Creamer, as a replacement for Jessica Korda, who had to withdraw from the Solheim Cup on Monday because of a lingering left forearm injury. With that news, the spot on the 12-player U.S. squad technically opened up. Well, open up for a player already chosen. You know why? Because captain's picks were announced along with the rest of the other rosters on Sunday, but there was one potential U.S. player that wasn't revealed along with 2 captain's picks. Julie Inkster also had to choose an alternate on Sunday in case any of the members had to withdraw, and that's what happened, and now Creamer was that alternate. But let's start taking a look at both teams and see what we think about it. Let's start with the visiting team. The European team is a 27.7-year-old average. Charlie Hall is in her third. She has played already twice. Georgia Hull, 21 years old. She's a rookie. Jovi Warshadov, she's 29. She's going to play in her second. Mel Reed, she's 29. She's going to play in her third. Florentina Parker, she's 28. She's a rookie. Carlota Siganda from Spain, she's 27. She's going to be in her third. Karina Iker, she's 38. She is the oldest member of that team, and she's going to be in her fourth. Susanne Pedersen from Norway, she's 36, and she'll be in her ninth Solheim Cup. Anna Nordqvist from Sweden, she's 30. She'll be in her fifth. Caroline Masson, those are the wild cards, where Anna Nordqvist, Caroline Masson from Germany, she's 28. She'll be in her third. And rookies, Emily K. Petersen from Denmark, who's 21, and Madeline Sackstrom from Sweden, who's 24. Fred, I hear, I can only say that my only surprise might have been Emily K. Petersen, but I guess my take is she was the next op in the Ladies European Tour Solheim Cup points lead. She might feel very confident, I guess, from her top players right now that are in there to give Emily and Madeline the nod. But really, I thought that she would have gone at least with one more veteran, and I thought Sandra Gall had that other wild card locked out. She played very well there in the British Open, but apparently no. She's going with Emily Kay and Madeline Sackstrom, which I had already said that I thought she was going to pick it. So what are your takes on her picks?
Yeah, you know, since we had we've been following Sackstrom, you know, since last year when she won three times. We had her on the show. We got to talk to her a little bit. And, yeah, you know, when you look at these things, you got to look at the people they didn't pick. And so when I look down the list for Annika, Sandra Gall is a name that jumps out. I would probably have taken Sandra Gall over Emily Christine Pedersen. I did watch her a little bit. And, I you know, she's a nice player. So I hope it works out well for her. Nana Kurtz-Madsen was number 10 on the ranking, so she was right up there also. I know we talked about this 2 weeks ago, whenever we talked about it. Even though her three wins have come on the Sumatra Tour, she still has that kind of killer instinct, and I like that. I probably would have taken her over Emily Kay. I think in 9 LPGA Tour events, Pedersen has 2 top 10 finishes and 75th on the LPGA money list with 130,000, so nothing exciting there. With Hall, Parker, Pedersen, and Sagstrom, the Europeans have 4 Solheim rookies. So, I mean, it looks like a good team. You got some experience on there. You got Ishay, you got Nordqvist, you got Masson, you got Siganda. So, you know, maybe they'll be okay, and maybe these young girls will just have that fire. I really like how Georgia Hall played at the British Women's. I thought she played fantastic. She stayed right there. She was there all 4 days. So, on the women's side, it is a little more, it was a little more, I don't know, surprising, I guess you might say. Angel Yin, where'd she come from? She did have an impressive women's British. She was in contention heading into the final round before finishing a tie for 11th. But, again, you got to look at who missed out that was up there. Angela Stanford, Marina Alex, Mo Martin, Paula Creamer, which ended up getting in anyhow, Allison Lee, and, of course, Morgan Pressel. She was probably too far down the list. But Allison Lee, Paula Creamer, Mo Martin were all ahead. Marina Allen were all ahead of Angel Yin. So kind of surprising. And it's also surprising the way maybe that Jessica Korda bowed out. I guess she did, as I'm researching it today, I guess she did tell Julie Inkster that she wasn't going to be able to play. She was going to have to withdraw. So they were going to have to go through the alternate Creamer, but they did not alert the LPGA. They were not aware of it. So they were taken unawares there. And, of course, Julie jumped in a plane in Scotland and was flying directly to San Diego for the U.S. Women's Amateur, where she'll be doing the coverage for Fox. So she was in an airplane, couldn't talk to anybody. So there was some confusion there for a while. And then Korda went on to Twitter, and really made the announcement. The LPGA found out she wasn't going to play via her Twitter post. So that's the thing, Carlos. Social media, Twitter, Facebook, that's the way everybody does everything, I guess. So kind of surprising, but we're going to break it all down next week. So that's all we're going to do, talk about that, I guess. So, but, yeah, it's a lot of surprises. A little surprise there with Solheim Cup. We'll break it all down for you next week going into it.
Yeah, just to close out on this, and my take on the U.S., Jessica Korda had taken it to Instagram on Thursday when she announced that she had withdrawn from the Rico Women's British Open. So this isn't something that it was there like yesterday. She has this forearm injury. She has been lingering with it. And we talked about Anna Nordqvist's injury 2 weeks ago.
Correct.
And she's playing through it. So we were also saying about Anna Nordqvist that we were expecting maybe she wasn't even going to play in the Rico Women's British Open, but apparently she gave it a go. She's playing well, but she's playing through it. And Jessica just couldn't do it. She had to withdraw after the first round there of the Rico Women's Open. So maybe that condition was serious enough to cause her to do that. Good thing she did it right away. I mean, she didn't wait. She did it yesterday. So it shouldn't come as a bad thing, like it's being made up. But,
yeah,
of course, you know, I mean, Julie had to have some alternate, and Paula was there. I mean, I get Angel Jin. I mean, she's an up-and-coming star. She kind of reminds me when Europe selected Charlie Hall 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Looking at Jin, Jin won the 7- and 8-year-old Junior World Golf Championships. She won the California State Women's Amateur Championships as a 12-year-old and again as a 14-year-old. She was the youngest player at the 2011 U.S. Women's Amateur, was co-medalist at the U.S. Women's Amateur, and was the youngest player in the field in the 2012 Women's U.S. Open, also the second youngest in history. Then if you go back to 2015, she also competed in the Junior Solheim Cup. So these, along with her playing really, really well lately. I mean, she finished T8 right there in your backyard in the Marathon Classic, and then she finished T11 at the Women's British Open. So to me, it gave it very easily for Julie to give her one of those spots. She's up and coming. She's fearless. She plays really well, and she's the up-and-coming one. So I get that. Okay, I give them. But Austin Ernest not shown any form all year. And besides, then you come think about what she can do to better the team. She's not spectacular in any part of her game. I'm not doing any trying to downplay Austin's ability
right.
or her game, but trying to fit it into the team. I mean, she doesn't have any spectacular part of her game that you would say she would fit in with somebody else. I'm trying to see with whom you can pair her, but at this same point right now, I don't see with whom. Other than Jin, Paula Creamer had really made a push this past few months. She went from 25 in the rankings to 16, and we all know how good she is to play at the cup level. I mean, I get it. You have to play for 2 years. It's not just this past 3 months. But that shows you how really it means the Solheim Cup for Paula. So I don't know about the Austin Ernest pick. I mean, I would have gone maybe other way. I would have given it maybe to Marina Alex, or if she wanted to go with Angela Stanford, it would have been fine. But that's the only pick that I don't see how it was a fit there for them. But, hey, we'll see, and we'll talk more about how they should be fitting in and who's going to play with next week as we approach the preview for the Solheim Cup. Any final words on that before I talk about what I wanted to talk about today?
No, I think that's it.
All right, let's talk about who else. Hideki
Matsuyama.
Hideki! He won his second World Golf Championship with a sublime final round of 61 at Firestone to win the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. His 9-under par run got him to 16-under, 5 ahead of overnight leader Zach Johnson. The 25-year-old made 7 birdies and an eagle in a flawless round. Hideki will now go into this week's PGA Championship as one of the strong favorites. He's also now up to number 3. He's very close now to number 2. The difference is just 0.0567 points. So he's right there knocking on Jordan Spieth's door at number 2. Yeah, he started with a par, and then he eagled a par 5 second at Firestone before another birdie at the 3rd. More birdies followed at the 6th and 9th to take him to out in 30 and 5 under par. He found another birdie at 13 and then close out in style with birdies at 16, 17, and 18. Overnight leaders Zach Johnson and Thomas Peters both finished inside the top 4, with Johnson finishing 2nd at 11 under and Peters in 4th at 8 under. Charlie Hoffman, he continues his run of form with a 3rd place finish. It's Matsuyama's 6th win in 20 starts, and 2nd WGC after he won the WGC HSBC Champions last November. He becomes just the 4th man to shoot 61 on the South Course at Firestone after Tiger Woods, Jose Maria Lazabal, and Sergio Garcia. Matsuyama, he played with Tiger 4 years ago when he shot 61, so he knew 61 was the number Sunday. He was thinking about that at 16, and if he knew that if he birdied 16, 17, and 18, he could get there. You know, that is gutsy, and that is the kind of competitiveness you want to see from the great players, those that don't play not to lose, but rather they go for the win and do not get their foot out of the pedal until the last putt drops. You play 18 holes. No lead is safe. You just go out and get it. But don't take my word for it. I mean, take it from the odds-on favorite for this week's PGA Championship, Rory McIlroy, who will not underestimate him. And he said, and I quote, "Once he gets going, he just keeps the hammer down and keeps it going. It's very impressive. He's played very impressively over the past 18 months with a lot of wins and a lot of good finishes. Great player, great young player. I expect him to be right up there next week as well." End of quote. You know, right? I do too. Matsuyama told Sky Sports, "That might be the best round I have ever played." Indeed it was. Hideki Matsuyama is back after 5 wins, 2 seconds, and a top five in 10 starts from September to February. He started to change, I don't know why, his putting stroke. And he looked like he would be reaching then the number 1 in the official World Golf rankings. But that now looks back on. And he has closed the gap between him and Jordan Spieth, like I said, to 0.617. Expect him to be back to number 1 soon. Mark it down. Zach Johnson, he tried all he could, but he got passed over by the Matsuyama runaway train. I mean, he's 2-under, was good for solo second. Charlie Hoffman, he's ready to win again. The American is up to a career-high 20th in the official World Golf rankings and has a runner-up in 2 top 3s in his last 5 starts. He is on fire. On the 16th, while his caddy was talking him into laying up on the par 5, Hoffman said, "Hey, man, I am back 3 with 3 to play. I mean, I'm trying to win a golf tournament. I'm tired of finishing 2nd. End of quote. Well, he actually finished solo 3rd, but those 2 bogeys on 12 and 14 got him into that position. Thomas Peters was the co-leader going into Sunday and got an early birdie and was tied with Matsuyama, but back-to-back bogeys on 8 and 9 put him back, and then he couldn't get anything to go his way on the back 9 as he parred his way to the clubhouse. He finished solo 4th. Rory McIlroy, he had 3 birdies in his first 6 holes. He looked like he was going to go to the top. He was just one of the lead. But then a bogey on 9th, and mostly the back-to-back that he had on 14 and 15, took him out of contention. He finished tied for 5th with Russell Knox and Adam Hadwin. But, hey, he's trailing nicely through with the PGA Championship this week. After a turbulent season plagued by a rib injury, he has now played 4 rounds at the Open and 4 rounds at the WGC Bridgestone with some good performances, finishing T4 and T5. So he's now looking like his form and confidence is back. He's definitely the favorite this week, having won 2 PGA championships, which takes place at Qual Halibut. We'll take more about that. We'll talk more about that later. Ricky Fowler, he keeps grinding, just not getting the W's. 966 on Sunday, jumping 7 slots into a solo ninth finish. Other notable finishers, Jordan Spieth was solid all week, but not spectacular. Finished T13 with Adam Scott, among others. DJ Henrik Stenson, Matt Kuchar, Brooks Koepka, and Bubba Watson were among seven players that tied for 17th. Jason Day, T24. John Rahm could never recover from his 17 on Friday. I mean, it was a 10-shot swing from what he shot the day before. He finished T28. But among others, Tommy Fleetwood and Alex Noren, Sergio and Phil Mickelson finished T39, and Justin Rose T63. Fred, all I can say is that I am happy Hideki let go of that change on his putting stroke that saw him start to plunge. He's back, and watch out, DJ. He's coming after number one.
Yeah, Hideki put on a show on Sunday for sure. Did you see Dustin Johnson hit a 439-yard drive? I don't care if it's downhill, downwind, 439 yards. That's like long drive competition stuff. That is on a regulation golf course, that's phenomenal. Also, the other thing I picked up, I didn't get to see much of the Bridgestone over the weekend, but I watched it Thursday and Friday, and Jason Day makes me hurt to watch him play. I mean, he's having trouble bending over, picking the ball out of the cup. His back's bothering him. Man, that guy's got to get – something's got to happen there. He's got to get fit. Let's talk a little bit about the guys that didn't qualify for the WGC Bridgestone. Still got a chance to earn a big check and some much-needed Tedesco points at the Barracuda Championship in Reno, Nevada. It was an opposite field event. It was a Stableford format that rewards aggressive play and birdies. Chris Stroud took advantage and got his first ever PGA Tour win in a three-man playoff. Stroud exploded for 20 points in the final round of the Barracuda, walked away with his first victory on the PGA Tour. He was number 144 in the FedEx Cup standings going into the week. He picked up 300 points with his win Sunday and jumped all the way to number 76, so he's comfortably in the FedEx Cup playoffs. He went back to an old club he had used before, a counterbalanced long putter, and I guess that really made a big difference. He just felt comfortable with it, and the ball started going in the hole. Stroud turned pro in 2004. He played mini tours, earned his PGA Tour card in 2006, and then also 2007 and 2008 through Q schools. His best performance in the PGA Tour event during those early years was a tie for fifth at the Downs Missouri Classic back in 2007. In 2010, he finished T10 at the Players. He lost in a sudden-death playoff to Ken Duke at the 2013 Travelers Championship. And here he is back on the back with the other guys that don't make it to the big event. So. The 20 points he made on Sunday left him tied with rookie Richie Werenski and Greg Owen. Owen was eliminated on the first playoff hole when he made par on the par 5 18th. Werenski was not able to birdie the hole the second time around, and Stroud's birdie gave him the win. He gets a two-year exemption and a surprise spot in the field for this week's PGA Championship. So instead of going home to Houston and spending some time with the family, he jumped right over to Charlotte, going to tee it up with the big boys in a major championship. Stuart Appleby, blast from the past, surprised himself for the top for fourth at the Barracuda Championship. He had five birdies, one bogey in his round on Sunday. Sam Saunders, we keep calling his name. He had another strong week, solo eighth at the Barracuda. So, Carlos, you got an opposite field event. Chris Stroud jumps back into, he gets a two-year exemption. He's going to be solid for the next couple years.
He definitely will, and we'll be right here talking about him and anything that he does. Hey, let's talk about the Champions Tour and the 3M Championship. Hey, you know, do you listen to Paul Goitis talking?
I love Paul Goitis. He is my favorite player. I want to play around the golf with Paul Goitis. Or better yet, just sit in the bar, have a beer, and talk to Paul Goitis. Yeah. I love this guy. He is one of my favorite guys.
He talks in running sentences 1 mile a minute. I mean, he can talk quick. He can talk fast. And he even admits that his nerves on the golf course might even be more twitchier than that. Yet, when Guido's caught a four iron thin out of the fairway on the first hole of a sudden death playoff Sunday evening during the 3M Championship, his heart didn't sink to his ankles. He said, "I know I have it." And you know what? He did. Just barely, but he did. His shot cleared the large pond guarding the 18th green by about a foot, coming to rest 30 feet from the cup. Gene Sowers, meanwhile, plunked his approach into the water moments earlier at the TPC Twin Cities in Blaine. Guido's won with a birdie, but once he was on safely in two shots, everything was essentially over, but signing the $262,500 check over for his fifth PGA Tour Champions victory. Both players finished with a 6-under par 66 in the final round to head to the playoff at 20-under for the championship, two ahead of Steve Stricker, Kevin Sutherland, and Brant Joby. Those low scores aided a cumulative scoring average of 69.278, which is the lowest in the event's 25-year history. Sunday's finale, which is the second year in a row extra holes were needed, came only after players and fans were ushered off the course earlier in the day for 62 minutes with lining in the area. The final eight groups were still on the course when the storm passed through the northern metro area. Guidos and Sowers were each 5-under for the day, but struggled to maintain any momentum after the weather. They made pars on the holes 13 through 17. Guidos then hit what he called maybe the best lag putt of my life and nearly made a 70-foot eagle at the last, missing by inches. Sowers ran his eagle putt 5 feet past the hole, but he made the clutch comeback putt to force both to play number 18 again. It was the second playoff loss this season for Sowers, who also lost a three-hole aggregate playoff to Colin Montgomery in the 2014 U.S. Senior Open. Second-round co-leader Kenny Perry was playing in the final group with Guidos and Sowers, but fell defeated all season. Perry, who's a two-time winner in Blaine, never rebounded from a chunk bogey on number six and labored on the greens on Sunday. After leaving several makeable putts short and burning the edges of the cup, Perry, he then made another bogey at the par 313 before the weather and horn sounded. He finished 2-under for the day and 16-under for the tournament, tied for seventh. Like Perry, Stricker spun his heels on the front nine, leaving a handful of birdies on the course with missed putts. Then Mother Nature stepped in. Two shots back to start the final round, Stricker parred the first five holes. The Wisconsin native, making his first appearance at the 3M Championship, had just made back-to-back birdies on numbers 13 and 14 to get to 17-under when a sonic crack of thunder halted play. After players returned to the course, Stricker put his next tee shot into a divot, then had to head out of a hazard on number 16. He needed an eagle on 18 to tie the leaders. Stricker took one club too many on approach and rocketed a shot well over the green, all but ending his chances at joining the playoff party. Fred, Guidos didn't need to give his winning shot the business, only enough to calm his nerves, and that was more enough to get the win.
So, did you read anything about Guidos sending part of his check to Bernhard Langer in a thanks for not showing up this week and let somebody else win? Was that part of it? Also, you know, Paul Guidos, I mean, he's a really interesting story. You know, he was just he would make cuts. He was always, you know, he's not winning much on the as a PGA Tour player, but he was always there, always there, always there. And his wife got very sick. Matter of fact, she died, and he had two young girls. And he ended up taking a lot of time away from the tour to be sure and spend time at home. He lives out in, I think he lives on in Long Beach in California, and spent a lot of time with his daughters growing up. And so he missed out on some time playing the tour because of family obligations. And he's a pretty cool story, actually, and he's a pretty neat guy. So really happy for Paul Guidos getting it. And besides, he's had a 59, Carlos. He's one of the 59 guys. So, hey, Web.com had a tournament. Nobody saw it, but they had a tournament clear out in San Francisco someplace. And they had this basketball player playing. This Steph Curry guy.
Basketball player?
I guess.
Basketball?
Yeah. He's an NBA guy. You know, Steph Curry, you know, the tall guys that jump high and shoot long. You know, Curry didn't do too bad, actually. He had a pair of 74s. He played pretty good. Didn't make a cut. You know, Ricky Fowler had a quote reported by Dave Shedlowski. To play that well with the kind of pressure he must have been under is very impressive. It's cool what he did. I've never been thrown into a situation where I've had to perform at the highest level or one of the highest levels competing in another sport. There may be a couple athletes on the PGA Tour, maybe Dustin Johnson or Gary Woodland, who could look athletic on a basketball court, but they aren't going to play to the level that Steph Curry did as a golfer. So, you know, it makes a really good point. To be a top golfer is one thing, but to be a tour professional, whether it's Web.com, European Tour, PGA Tour, McKenzie Tour, Latino American Tour, I don't care what tour you're at, to be a tour pro, it's a whole different deal than being a really good golfer. It's not even close. So, there are several instances of professional athletes from other sports becoming professional golfers after they retire. Most notably, Rick Rodin was a great pitcher. He became a great golfer, but he never really won any PGA Tour events. He, you know, money qualified a little bit, and he's done well in celebrity events. Johnny Bench played well on the senior tour. He did okay. He played in some PGA Tour events before he joined the over 50 set. You know, and these guys do have the discipline to practice. They know what it takes to compete at the high level, so they'll put the work in. I've been impressed with Steph Curry for several years now, and I do not doubt if he puts his mind into it and commits to practice, he can become a very good professional golfer when his basketball playing days are over. Will he make the PGA Tour? Doubtful. But there are a lot of opportunities for lower-level professional golfers, especially for ones with a big name like Curry. He was the big story, even though he didn't play on the weekend. Martin Piller, and, of course, he's more famous, the other half of the LPGA Tour star, Jarena Piller. He won the tournament, the LMA, in San Francisco last week. After four straight missed cuts, Piller went into the Digital Alley Open a week ago, hoping to find something to provide the spark he needed to push through the final 4 weeks on the web.com to get back to the PGA Tour next year. Whatever it was, he found it, and this week at the LMA Classic, he notched his sixth career web.com tour victory. The win moved him to 24th on the money list. He has admitted his goal would be changing as the web.com tour heads into the final 3 weeks. I now want to get into the 25 by the end of Portland. My goal is to change depending on how I'm playing. Now I want to be in the top 25. There's only two more events remaining until they hand out those top 25 PGA Tour cards for 2018. And then they go to the final series where the low 75 PGA Tour guys come down and the high 75 from the web.com play in the Tour Finals. So, Carlos, everything's starting to wind down. We're getting down to the end of the season. Can you believe it? We're at the PGA Championship. We're going to be having the FedEx Cup playoffs here pretty quick. And then guess what? NFL football starting. So you know what that means. Golf gets to the back burner.
That's right. That's right. That's why this wraparound season, I still don't get it, but we'll see. Anyway, that's it for the Week in Backswing and the recap of this past weekend's action. Now let's take a look. We know we have the big one, which is a PGA Championship. That is going to be in our practice range. There's two more tournaments that are going to be played this weekend on the – one of them is on the web.com tour. That's the Price Cutter Charity Championship presented by Dr. Pepper. You know, things are, like you said, things are coming down the wire for the 2017 web.com tour season. With only three events left in the regular season, every dollar and every good result is ever more important. A week ago, you just mentioned it, Martin Piller showed how important one great week could be, as his win catapulted him from 105th on the money list all the way to 24th and inside D25 for the first time this season. He's now on the cusp of earning a tour card, but as he proved last week, we're in for a wild couple of weeks before the Web.com Tour Finals. The tournament will be contested, this one, at the venerable Highland Springs Country Club in Springfield, Missouri. This course plays at a par 72 at 7,060 yards. It will have a purse of $675,000 with a first prize of $121,500. So the winner could easily come into the 25 after that. There will be no television coverage. But you know what? As the tournament's title says, and I want to talk about this because as it is with all golf tournaments, charities benefit big time every week there is one running. This is one of the big charity fundraising tournaments, and one of the newest charities partnering with the Pricewaterhouse Charity Championship is the Honoring Our Heroes program. It is in its second year now with the tournament. Sponsorships of the program support children's charities and allow military veterans, as well as current military, law enforcement, first responders, and their families to attend the tournament for free, plus they will receive complimentary food and drink as well as a great view from seating in a covered tent on the 18th green. Pricewaterhouse Charity Championship events will begin Friday and continue through August 14th there at the Highland Springs Country Club and other venues, with the main golf tournament taking place from August 10th to the 13th. You know, Tournament Executive Director Gerald Andrews on Thursday expressed hope that businesses and individuals will partner with the tournament to support the 47 area children charities through the Honoring Our Heroes program, which has become a key fundraiser for the tournament. And we also always talk about this. I mean, I don't think there is another sport that raises as much money for charities as golf. I mean, it's an incredible thing, and this is one thing that I wanted to note about this tournament. The great thing, 47 area children charities benefiting from just one of the partnering programs. That's the Honoring Our Heroes program. So I hope those businesses take notice, Fred, and call there to be key on that fundraising.
$3.8 billion last year, Carlos. $3.8 billion raised for charities through golf events. Now, most of that money comes from local golf outings and, you know, larger functions in communities. But about $200 million of the $3.8 billion is raised by professional golf tournaments. So, indeed, you name me one other segment of the economy that generates that kind of money for charities and local charities. We're talking about the work and those. I mean, right here, we see it in Toledo. Over $500,000 is raised every year, and that's big money for Toledo, for the 20 children's charities that benefit from that. So you're right, Carlos. It's something we don't talk enough about, and a good point there. Hey, one other preview we want to talk about real briefly. The U.S. Women's Amateur is going on right now out in San Diego. And I thought I had the current score here. I was going to get that for you, but it didn't update. Here we go. So they're in San Diego. 1,327 hopefuls entered the qualifying. Only 156 players entered the 2 days of medal play to whittle the field down to the top 64 for match play. After the first round of medal play yesterday, Haley Miller of California and Kristen Gilman of Texas were tied at top with 67s. Today, you've got Shannon Aubert fired at 66. She's from France, so she becomes the medalist with the 69-66. You've got a young Julianne Alvarez from New Zealand. She fires 71-68 to be second. So Haley Moore ends up at T4, and Gilman ends up down at T8. Monday and Tuesday is the 2 days of medal play. Top 64 going to match play starting tomorrow. You can see all of that, of course, on Fox and FS1. If you want to watch the U.S. Women's Amateur. So, Carlos, that's all I have to say about that.
And with that, we end up our look towards two of the three tournaments that are going to be this weekend. Now we have the par 5 news, where we're going to have a par 6 today. We're going to commit a bogey, but there there's some great news that we have for you. So, Fred, yes, usually you tee it off, and then there seems to be some changes looming at Augusta. Apparently, if we take a look at one letter there, so tell us what was that.
Yeah, I will. Carlos, I also want to mention, before I get into that, that we came out, the NW Golf Links came out with a new summer special travel issue last week, and you can view that at nwo.back9mediagroup.com. If you're thinking about taking a summer golf trip here in August or September, Michigan makes a wonderful place to go. There's so much golf in Michigan. In the travel issue, we talk about six golf resorts in northern Michigan. You can take driving trips like from where I'm at. If you're coming from the Midwest, we talk about places you can stop on the way up. You can drive, play in the morning, drive on up, play the next day up in some place, stay a couple days, and then we give you places to play on your way back home. So nwo.back9mediagroup.com. View the special travel issue. Yeah, Carlos, last week, Augusta Country Club, not to be misrepresented by Augusta National, this is Augusta Country Club, which sits adjacent to Augusta National, sent a letter to its members announcing the transfer of a piece of its property to Augusta National Golf Club, which borders their northwest boundary. The letter states that a portion of their holes, number 8 and 9, will be renovated and retain the architectural integrity the original designer, Donald Ross, envisioned. Plus, the renovation will not cost the Augusta Country Club membership due to the sale of the parcel of its land to Augusta National. This deal has been in the works for a long time. It's been rumored for a couple years. They've been talking about it. But Augusta Country Club knew they had something that Augusta National had to have. They had an exorbitant price. They were holding over Billy Payne's head, and even he thought it was excessive, and he's got enough money to pay anything that they want. It appears that the final deal involves some renovations to the existing Augusta Country Club, which Augusta National is going to pay for. Under Chairman Billy Payne's leadership, Augusta National has been buying surrounding property and businesses to protect its boundaries and use for potential growth. The Berkman Place extravaganza was made possible by buying up adjoining property and expanding Augusta National's borders. One of the things on Chairman Payne's wish list is to renovate number 5, for which Tom Fazio has already been contacted to come up with a plan. The new purchase will allow a new tee to be built for the par 5 13th, plus possibly build a new players' hotel back on that corner of the property. It's amazing that even with all the money that Augusta National has, it's able to expand and renovate the course to keep it relevant with the times. It sits in the middle of a retail and residential area that is old and has been there for a long time. It's just amazing to me how they keep getting this done. But there again, it just shows you, if you got the money, you can make things happen, Carlos.
If you get the money, well, show me the money, and you know what happens.
Show me the money.
Show them the money, and everybody will come. And let's talk a little bit about golf business. Callaway Golf shares surged 8% on Friday after the Carlsbad company posted better-than-expected final results and said it is buying apparel brand Travis Matthew. Callaway Golf is looking to make inroads in the golf lifestyle apparel business by entering an agreement to acquire Travis Matthew for $125.5 million in an all-cash transaction. Callaway is the industry's top-selling brand when it comes to woods, drivers, and irons, claiming 26% of the retail hard goods market. That's up significantly from the 14% they had at the end of 2012. And the company is continuing to make an aggressive push beyond clubs under President and CEO Chip Brewer. Though Callaway has been gaining market share in golf equipment, the golf market itself has been stagnant for years. Player participation, which drives club and ball sales, has been flat, and rounds played in the U.S. are down 3.8% through June, according to industry research firm Golf Data Tech. But although the number of golf isn't growing, Brewer said he's optimistic that the market is improving, in part because some competitors have left and those that remained aren't slashing prices to get rid of excess inventory. Brewer believes that Callaway can boost growth through acquisitions of companies that are tangential to golf equipment. Callaway acquired Toulon Design Custom Putters a year ago, and in January purchased OGIO International, which is a golf bags and accessory company, for $75.5 million, adding a platform for growth in the lifestyle category. In Travis Matthew, Callaway adds a popular 10-year-old men's sportswear brand that's found in high-end department stores and country clubs, resorts, and in Travis Matthew's experiential retail stores. It was founded in 2007 and is carried by Nordstrom and other retailers. It also operates its own stores in upscale malls in Century City, Newport Beach, University City, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Travis Matthew's net sales are expected to be $55 million to $60 million this year, and the company will continue to operate out of its Huntington Beach, California headquarters. The sale is expected to be completed by the end of September. Fred Callaway's shares ended trading Friday up $1.03 at $13.50 on the New York Stock Exchange. They are definitely riding the crest of the wave on an otherwise downward golf business economy.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if we're going to see, you know, like Adidas. Well, of course, now they're split up, Adidas and TaylorMade, but, you know, Nike got out of the equipment business. They're still in the clothing business, but Callaway's going the other way. It's that's kind of surprising. It's something I didn't put in here, Carlos, that we, you know, I picked up yesterday, too, was that Revolution Golf, it's a huge internet golf news, tips, travel, information website. I think there's like three different sites involved in Revolution Golf. It was bought by Golf Channel. And so they bring a lot of emails and a lot of internet presence to Golf Channel, who seems to want to expand on the internet also. So a lot of stuff going on in the golf world in the business side, Carlos. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Jack Nicklaus. The PGA of America announced last week that PGA Reach, which is a charitable foundation, will partner with the Nicklaus companies to support PGA Reach in its mission to impact the lives of PGA members, PGA sections, and the game of golf. The partnership includes financial support from Nicklaus, as well as a personal commitment from Jack to make an impact on all three areas for youth, military, diversity, and inclusion in the PGA Reach programs. The Nicklaus companies will become a PGA Reach trustee. Jack will serve as spokesman. He'll also help promote the PGA Junior League. So Jack's really getting involved here with the PGA a little bit more. He donated $100,000 directly to PGA Hope, which is helping our Patriots everywhere. That will launch five new PGA Hope programs. They need to get some of this money filtered down to some of the local pros. Carlos, we've got a few of our friends, Mark Croft, Rich O'Brien, Ty Anderson, and Kathy Gilbert-Jensen are very involved with Project Reach and Project Hope, and they need this money to carry on the good work they're doing at the local level. So I hope this money gets filtered down to where it's really needed, because these guys are doing a fantastic job. Matter of fact, Rich O'Brien, the PGA Hope, there in North Carolina, was featured in a show previous to the before CBS started the WGC Bridgestone, talking about the PGA Hope and what they're doing down there in the Carolinas. So great for Jack Nicklaus, good for him. He's helping to promote the PGA Reach and the PGA Hope programs. I really think, you know, in my opinion, these are two of the better initiatives from the PGA of America, and then getting Jack Nicklaus involved as a partner gives the two programs attention and should help grow two very worthwhile programs going forward, Carlos.
You can bet that anything that is has Jack Nicklaus' name on it is something worth looking at it, and hopefully that'll give that look enough for people to draw into it and, you know, support it. Hey, Fred. Let's talk about, you know, all year round, injuries happen on all major tours in golf, and most of the people never even find out. Many players play through it just because of the money involved, so they have to tough it up and as much as they can play and play and play. Sometimes it makes it worse. We don't know. Sometimes we don't even hear about that. But take, for example, Brent Snedeker, who has withdrawn from the 99th PGA Championship, who is continuing to rest his ailing rib as the first alternate. Now Chris Kurt will take his spot on the field. He started the withdrawal train back at the Open and has since backed out of the RBC Canadian Open and also the WGC Regional Invitational. His ailment deals with inflamed cartilage between his sternum and ribcage. Snedeker is obviously missing some pretty big events, so this is a serious injury, but still, we don't hear much about it. At the same time, he has his place in the FedEx Cup locked up. He's currently 55th in the standings, so he can afford to rest before attempting to make a big push in the playoffs. But if I tell you, I have here, right now, the list of over 35 players that are sidelined, and we don't know when they're going to be coming back. Let's say, for example, Martin Keimer, he's sidelined since July 31st with a shoulder injury. Apparently, he's going to return on August 24th. William McGirth, since July 28th, an undisclosed injury. Hopefully, he'll be back this week. We don't know. But we have players like, I'm sure you haven't heard that Scott Piercy has been out since July 27th, Will McKenzie, July 24th, George McNeil, since July 23rd. Like I said, Brent Snedeker is here on this report since July 19th. Other players that I can mention here, David Toms, May 11th, Ben Curtis since April 20th, John Curran since February 12th. Of course, we all know Tiger Woods is since February the 2nd. So there has been a lot of players here. I have over 35 that I could go down and tell you. Out of all that, only three have a return date. Okay, so that could tell you that. I mean, a lot of players. Bo Van Pelt, I have him out since December 26th of last year with an arm. I didn't know that. So I would have thought that he was playing all around, but he's not. So that's the kind of things that we don't listen, we don't know about. There are a lot of players out, and hopefully, you know, all of them are able to go through and come back and play. But there's also other time off taken, like Adam Scott, who needed a good week this past week in the WGC Bridgestone Invitational to assure himself at least one more start in the FedEx Cup playoffs that are approaching. That is because Scott is taking a three-week break after the PGA Championship to be here with his wife, who is due to give birth to their second child on August 19th. Scott entered the Firestone event in 70th position in the FedEx Cup points and well aware that only the top 70 will advance to the third playoff event, the BMW Championship at Conway Farms. So, as it is, Scott finished T13 in Akron, moving him to 61st in the standings. So, Fred, he can now go and have his daddy time.
Yeah, you know, another thing, I happened to catch some of Jimmy Walker's press conference today on the Golf Channel. And, you know, he's been fighting Lyme disease, had to take some time off, and they were asking him about it. And he said, you know, it's tough. He said, you feel like you're getting behind. You know, the points are so important. You want to be out there playing. You want to be working. He said he really doesn't like to take time off. He likes to be playing and working on his game, but, you know, you just can't. You're injured, you're sick, you have to recuperate and get somewhat healthy. And so he says he's just now starting to feel stronger again, starting to get back to it. You know, of course, he is a defending champion in the PGA Championship this week. So, you know, these guys battle that. You know, do I take time off? Do I miss getting a paycheck? If they're not playing, they can't appease their sponsors, and that's more important than winning a check. So, you know, they've got to be out there. It looks all sweetness and light when you see them on TV and they're making birdies and all that stuff, but it's a tough business being a professional golfer. Carlos, would you like a golf course where you could just go and maybe play three holes or six holes rather than a full nine or 18? You know, we've been talking about golfers playing a short loop of less than a nine-hole round for some time. Jack Nicklaus even has built six-hole loops that return to the clubhouse in some of his designs. We have more short courses being built at resorts around the country every day, especially at the high-end resorts. Well, this Canal Shores, an 18-hole short par 60 golf course on the north side of Chicago in Evanston found a way to offer a short course for reduced green fees to their patrons. Matter of fact, Bill Murray and his brother did some caddying at Canal Shores as kids when they grew up there in Chicago. The managers of the club, like every golf business, kept looking for ways to increase revenues. Survey information dictates that as people move faster and faster today with their hectic schedules, golf takes too much time and drives potential new golfers away. When they looked at their routing, they found they could make 2 5-hole routings that would drastically reduce playing time and also attract juniors or families with small kids that wanted to introduce them to the golf but didn't want to play for an 18-hole round. You know, Carlos, anyone who has children understands the attention span of an 8-year-old, and it certainly doesn't work for a 5-hour, 18-hole round of golf. Kids get frustrated playing a regulation golf course because they can never get to the green. What they like is putting. They love to putt and chip. Even if it takes 20 putts. They love, of course, driving the cart's a big deal, too. They like that. But they love to jump off and run up there and putt. And see the ball go in the hole. So we have a short course that we take our grandkids to. Sometimes they play 6 holes. Sometimes they play 3 holes. Take a break. Drive the cart. Play a few holes at the end. But they always putt. You know, having access to a short course or a kid-friendly facility helps parents introduce kids to the game and makes it economical. More golf course owners need to take a look at their facilities and try to make a junior course or a short loop that could work for a family with kids to have a good time on. Some golf courses close their driving range at certain times to make it accessible for a few short holes for juniors and families. You know, can this help golf course owners increase income? The short answer to this is yes. It may require some additional planning on the course's part, but additional investment should be at a minimum, not be a problem. If a course is struggling and looking for any way to increase revenues, this could be a good thing, Carlos. Build up their junior program. Junior programs, guess what? They bring the parents. The parents see the kids having a good time. They want to play golf with their kids. If they got a little course to go play on, this could work.
And to wrap up the Bar 5 News, which is a part 6 today, the RNA hosted a Women's Leadership Summit this past week ahead of the RICO Women's British Open at King's Barnes near St. Andrews. A group of 21 women from the worlds of business, finance, sports, education, and media met in the clubhouse at the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews. The summit, conceived and organized by Sky Golf presenter and businesswoman Sarah Sturck, was designed as a pathfinder for a larger event next year. Keynote sessions on the art of confidence and the perception of ambition, the rise of female representation in the boardroom, and what sport must learn from business for a sustainable future were debated and will help shape the agenda for the summit plan for 2018. Session leaders included Caroline Hyde, Bloomberg Technology News Anchor, Dr. Bridget McConnell, CBE, from Glasgow Life Chief Executive, and Jane Booth, the Head of Research at Women Ahead. Sarah Sturck said, and I quote, "Major sport has the power to bring people together from all walks of life. It takes them out of their workplace and provides an inspiring forum for debate for those who occupy leadership positions in their own organizations. Our aim this week was to move forward with an equality and diversity agenda for a full-scale summit in 12 months' time at the RICO Women's British Open at Royal Lytham and St. Anne's. The eve of the RICO Women's British Open proved the perfect stage for our inaugural Women's Leadership Summit, and the RNA and RICO were fantastic hosts. Our Pathfinder group of 20 women from business, finance, media, and the arts was clearly inspired by their surroundings, and we have the makings of a great agenda for a full-scale summit at the event next year. Special thanks to the RNA Chief Executive, Martin Slumbers, who gave us his office for the day and who took part in the Q&A that revealed the progress being made in plans to encourage more women and girls into golf." End of quote. You know, the summit was supported by the RNA and the RICO Euro PLC. The RNA, as you all know, merged with the latest Golf Union on January 1st of this year and now has the responsibility for running a series of elite women's amateur championships and international matches, as well as supporting the development of women's and girls' golf around the world. So this is just a way to try to reach out now a little bit to the business women and the business leaders, the females, so that in a way they can also make their support towards that growing of golf and for the women's and girls around the world. And with that, we'll wrap up our Part 5 news. Now, Fred, we're going for the practice range. Every week, you and I pick a topic, and each of us take our shots at it. But I think there was no debate on what should be the topic this week is the PGA Championship. You know, Quail Hollow in Charlotte, North Carolina is going to play host to its first major this week as the 2017 U.S. PGA Championship is rolling into town. In February 1916, the Professional Golfers Association of America, the PGA, was established in New York City. 1 month earlier, the wealthy department store owner, Rodman Wanamaker, hosted a luncheon with the leading golf professionals of the day at the Waikagil Country Club in nearby New Rochelle. The attendees prepared the agenda for the formal organization of the PGA. Consequently, golf historians dubbed Waikagil the cradle of the PGA. The new organization's first president was Robert White, one of Waikagil's best-known golf professionals. The first PGA Championship was held then first in October 1916 at the C108 Country Club in Bronxville, New York. The winner, Jim Barnes, received $500 and a diamond-studded gold medal donated by Rodman Wanamaker. The 2016 winner, Jimmy Walker, he earned $1.8 million, just so you know how times have changed. The champion is also awarded a replica of what is the Wanamaker Trophy, which was also donated by Wanamaker to keep for 1 year, and a smaller-sized keeper replica Wanamaker Trophy. Now, it is an official money event on the PGA Tour, European Tour, and Japan Golf Tour, with a purse of $10 million since the 97th edition in 2015. You know, the tournament was previously promoted with the slogan, Glory's Last Shot. In 2013, the tagline had been dropped in favor of the season's final major, as suggested by PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham, while discussing the allowance of a one-week break in its schedule prior to the Ryder Cup. Fincham had argued that the slogan was not appropriate as it weakened the stature of events that occur after it, such as the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup playoffs. Then PGA of America CEO Pete Bevacqua explained that they had also had discussions with CBS, adding that it was three entities that all quickly came to the same conclusion that, you know what, there's just not much in that tagline, and we don't feel it's doing much for PGA Championship, so let's not stick with it. Let's think what else is out there. For a time, the tournament used the slogan, "This is Major," as a replacement. But something major happened yesterday. It has always been the golf season's final major, played in mid-August on the third weekend prior to Labor Day weekend. It was rescheduled for 2016 to late July to accommodate golf's return to the Olympics. But there were some development, major ones, regarding that yesterday. So, Fred, what happened yesterday?
Well, Carlos, I mean, you know, I mentioned it earlier. Football rules is the number one sport in America. That's the way it is.
You think it is.
When the PGA Championship and the FedEx Cup are forced to go head-to-head on television networks, golf always loses. So in an effort to increase viewership of its marquee events, the PGA Championship will move its traditional August date to May, to accommodate starting the FedEx Cup earlier and thus avoiding conflict with the NFL and college football. The new scheduling will begin as soon as 2019 when the PGA Championship is set for Bethpage Black in New York. Moving the Players' Championship back to its original March time slot was also necessitated by the PGA Championship move. The season will begin, as always, in Hawaii, then the West Coast, Florida, and then the Players in March. the Masters in April, PGA in May, U.S. Open in June, Open Championship in July, and wrap up the season with the Fed Cup in August. Everything's done by Labor Day. We're out of here. This also has a side benefit for the players. It shortens the real season for the top players to give them more of a respite from the rigors of big-time golf. They're also now going to be freed up to travel. Here's the real reason, Carlos. This is the bottom line for the players. They're now going to be freed up to travel the world for bigger appearance fees. And the European Tour should benefit greatly as it will continue to hold events around the world and into the fall. You know, I see the European Tour as a big winner in this thing, okay? Yeah. More people, golf fans, are going to watch the European Tour. More top names are going to play in some European Tour events because they're going to pay appearance fees to come and play in them. So I see the European Tour as a big winner here. One side note, it's going to be the PGA Championship is going to be scheduled for the week prior to the Memorial Day weekend, okay? The week after that, you know what normally is then? Is the Memorial Tournament down here in Columbus. Now, do you think Jack Nicklaus is going to be happy being the week after a major? I don't think so, Carlos. We've got one other thing happening. We've got one other thing happening in golf. You know, the first FedEx Cup player, not the first, it's the one in Boston, is that the second one?
Yes.
They're going to be dropping. They're going to be dropping out, right? The Deutsche Bank? They're going to be dropping out after this year, I think. So, and nobody's saying this. I picked this up kind of through the wind.
What are you going to say?
Do you think the Memorial is going to become a FedEx Cup event and move to August? Huh? I'm going to throw that out there, Carlos.
I don't know. You're just saying it. Just for saying, right? Just leaving it out
just
there.
Just saying.
But you know what?
It
would make all the sense in the world. And you remember when we talked about this first and you were saying that Jack Nicklaus said that he had talked already about this.
To the PGA Tour. Yes.
And he was just calm about it. It's like, what? Really? You're calm?
Yep.
There has to be something behind
going
on.
Yep.
Because otherwise he wouldn't have been that confident. And he would have been throwing a fit and saying, why? This is happening to me, this tournament. You know, I think you're onto something there, Fred. I have not thought about that, but trying to piece those things together definitely seems like there's something going on, and for sure that could be one of them. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. It makes all the sense.
I just don't see Jack being happy being the week after a major. I just don't see that happening.
No, he wouldn't.
Well, to wrap this up, Carlos, before you jump in here, from a golf fan's perspective, the move shouldn't be really of any consequence. The majors are now in order with the players leading off the year instead of the Masters. Matter of fact, you know, the Masters might be one of the biggest losers of this thing because, you know, golf fans anxiously anticipate the year's first major every April. But now the Players is going to be really the first big event of the year. So it's kind of going to jump ahead of the Masters, don't you think? Their promotion is going to get pushed into a 30-day window there. So I don't know, Carlos. A lot of ramifications. We're going to have to wait and see how they all sort out. But some food for thought there.
Oh, yeah. Very good one. Very good point. Let's talk quickly about the course that they're going to be playing. You know, the PGA Championship is primarily played in the eastern half of the United States. Only 10 times it has ventured west. It was last played in the Pacific time zone 19 years ago in 1998 at the Sahalee east of Seattle. And California's most recent visit was in 1995 at Riviera. The Mountain Time Zone has hosted three, all in suburban Denver, 1941, 67, and 85. The 102nd edition that's going to be in 2020 is scheduled for TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, the first for the Bay Area and a return to California after a quarter century. Through 2016, the state of New York has hosted 12 times, followed by Ohio, 11 times, and Pennsylvania, 9. This year will be played at the Quail Hollow club in Charlotte, North Carolina. It boasts a 7,600 yards long course that plays a par 71 for the first time. This is the third North Carolina course to host a PGA Championship. The others were Pinehurst number 2, where Denny Shute won in 1936, and Tanglewood, where Lee Trevino won in 1974. Quail Hollow has been the host of the Wells Fargo Championship since 2003, except that it
Carlos, we lost you. Carlos was giving the background on the Quail Hollow. Are you there, Carlos?
Yes,
are you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. No, you cut out there. You cut out. You're cutting out just a little bit. So,
okay.
You're in and out. You're in and out.
Different Quail Hollow this week, and that might have an influence on scoring.
Carlos, yes. Time out. Carlos, you're cutting in and out. We're only getting about every other word. I don't know if you got something's loose or something.
No.
Now I can't.
Can you hear me?
There you are. Yeah, I can hear you now. Now you're good.
Strange. Well, let's say that
you might want to start. You might want to start your last paragraphs there. So over. Redo that. Okay.
Okay. Quail Hollow has been a host of the Wells Fargo Championship since 2003, except that it moved to Wilmington, North Carolina, this year because of the PGA Championship. But this will be a very slightly different Quail Hollow this week, and that may have an influence on scoring. The changes have been made with this year's PGA Championship in mind, as well as the 2021 President's Cup. The 2017 Wells Fargo Championship was moved this year to Eagle Point because of the US PGA Championship, and work started on the changes as soon as the final group teed off on Sunday back into 2016 Wells Fargo. The opening five holes went through a major alteration after last year's tournament and now plays to a par 71. Three new holes have been built. Fairways have been restructured, greens have been reshaped, and areas have been designated for grandstands. The greens have been changed to Champion Ultra Dwarf Bermuda grass, which should mean they roll absolutely perfect. Thousands of trees have been removed to both reshape the course and allow more sunlight onto the new greens, while some may have been taken out to allow grandstands as well. The first and second holes have been merged into one, which is a new 540-yard par 4. A new par 3 fourth hole has been built, and the fifth has changed from a par 5 to a par 4. Fred, a lot of changes, like I said, they have been made with this PGA Championship in mind and the 2021 President's Cup Quail Hollow. Do you think that will impact the play now that it's playing to a par 71?
Absolutely. I was listening a little bit to the players talking yesterday. That first hole at Quail Hollow now, you said 540. They were talking about it playing 524 yesterday. 524 yards, Carlos, par 4. For me, I don't know about you, that's at least a par 5. Anything over 450, 475, that's a par 5. I'm sorry, that's not a par 4. I know in majors they like to get these 490-yard par 5s, but 524, 540, give me a break. Plus, they're getting a lot of rain down there right now. You know what, Carlos? It rains in North Carolina in the summertime. Did you know that? It gets very hot and humid there, and it rains in the afternoon. Can you believe that? What a surprise that is. I think we said something about that a couple of years ago when they announced that they were going to play it there then. They said, even with Dustin Johnson, Rory, and, you know, some of these other long hitters carrying at 340, they're still going to have a mid-iron in their hands on the second shot into that green. I mean, they're going to be 180 out, 190 out. You know, a guy only hits at 290, he's gonna be looking at 220 in there, 230, 240. The wind was blowing into their face yesterday, I guess, on that hole. Will McGirt did play a practice round, so whether he played or not, I don't know, but he played a practice round. He had a driver and a 3-wood, and it was 20 yards short of the green on a par 4. That seems a little excessive. So, you want to watch, Carlos, a bogey on that first hole will be a good score. It's going to play to about 4.5, probably. you know, a par on that hole is going to be like making a birdie. You're going to gain strokes on the field if you make a par at the first hole. So it's going to slap him right in the face for sure.
Definitely could impact the psyche because you're starting with a bogey.
Oh.
I'm going backwards. Starting on the first hole.
And the players are talking about that. You say, you know, we just have to accept that we may make a bogey on the first hole, and that's a good score, you know, because the field average is going to be over 4.5. I mean, it's just going to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, the forecasters, just to close that part, the forecasters are expecting a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms through the peak days, but Sunday should be very sunny, so we'll see what happens there. Let's talk now about the storylines this year, and there's plenty of them. I'm just going to go about some of them. Jimmy Walker, as we said, he's defending the title that he won last year where he claimed his first major with a one-stroke victory over a defending champion and world number one at the time, Jason Day. By the way, Jason Day holds the PGA Championship record with 8 consecutive rounds in the 60s. The last 3 PGA Championship winners, Walker, Day, and Rory McIlroy, each shot 68 or better all 4 rounds, so expect that. Jimmy Walker will be trying to do something that Tiger Woods has only done once. I mean, that only Tiger Woods has done. Tiger Woods is the only player to win the PGA Championship back-to-back. He did it in 1999 and 2000 and then repeated it in 2006 and 2007 since it switched to stroke play in 1958. The American is in the field this week and back in form after suffering with Lyme disease, like you mentioned, before this year. But it's another Texan who's stealing the headlines coming into Qual Hollow. That's Jordan Spieth, who's coming into this week fresh of his Open Championship victory and is looking to become the youngest golfer ever to win the career Grand Slam. If he were to win, he would do so 6 months early, and then Tiger Woods wrap up the career Grand Slam in 2000 at St. Andrews. Now, of the 5 players with the career Grand Slam, none finish it off at the PGA Championship. Will he be the one to break that? But even after all this, he isn't even the favorite with the bookies this week. Rory McIlroy comes in as the favorite after a T4 at the Open and a T5 at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. The world number 4 recorded his first PGA Tour win at Qual Hollow back in 2010 at the Qual Hollow Championship when he shot a course record 10 under par 62 in the final round. He won the tournament again in 2015, lost in a playoff to Ricky Fowler in 2012, and has finished T10 in 2013 and T8 in 2014. He's armed with a new caddy, Harry Diamond, and having got rid of some of the rust from not playing while suffering from a rib injury, he has been walking with confidence in the past few weeks, hitting the ball superbly, and even holding some funds. So he is the favorite, definitely, Fred. What is your take on this and any other storylines going on?
Well, as you mentioned, most of the field this week at the PGA Championship, they're all familiar with Quail Hollow. They have done some renovations, so there's some different holes. They have to check that out. Because the Wells Fargo has been held there since 2003. But some have some better memories than others. You mentioned Rory McIlroy. He got his first PGA Tour victory here in 2010, with Phil Mickelson collecting the runner-up prize money back then. Rory won again in 2015 and was runner-up to Ricky Fowler when he got his first PGA Tour win at Quail Hollow in 2012. So you got Patrick Rogers and Webb Simpson. This is the home games for Simpson. They were runner-up to Rory in 2015. So you've got some guys that have some good vibes coming in here and some guys that are kind of playing pretty well, Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy. Two of the top names. You know, this is a driver's golf course. Rory is reducing the par 4 holes, and he's hitting short wedges on all of them. A stat that is very telling, however, for Rory McIlroy, he did finish top 5 in the Open Championship. But of the 76 players that made the cut, he was dead last in proximity to the hole from 125 to 150 yards. His wedge play has not been sharp, and he's leaving himself too many long putts on the green. You know, he's talking about he wasn't putting well and different. The reason was he's hitting it too far from the hole from the fairway. When he's got those wedges in his hand, he's got to be hitting it inside 15 feet, and he's just not doing that. So that's the real reason for his uneven play. He's driving the ball well, but his short game has not returned to championship caliber. Now, if he can get that back, if he's hitting the ball close with the wedges, and you'll be able to see that on Thursday and Friday, if he's hitting the wedges better, he's probably the guy to beat, unless he has a dreadful time on the greens. But now, when you want to talk about long drivers, you got to talk about Dustin Johnson, right? I mean, when he plays that cut shot off the tee, if he can find the short game that he had before he had the accident, the Masters hurt his back, he could be the guy to beat. So, I mean, he did so well at Oakmont last year in the U.S. Open. This is the same kind of a deal. If he can get out there long, keep it a fairway, hit those wedges in there, make a putt or two, he's right there. And as you mentioned, Carlos, the biggest storyline coming in this week is Jordan Spieth's quest to close out the career Grand Slam. You know, I think this issue may sell some tickets, get some casual golf fans to watch, especially as Spieth happens to be in the mix on the weekend. But thinking he's going to complete a career Grand Slam, that might be a bit premature for me. Bottom line, I'm not sure Jordan's long enough for the way Quail Hollow is going to be played this week. It's going to be soft. It's going to be long. I really think a long hitter is going to win this thing, or I will qualify that. Someone like a Zach Johnson or Steve Stricker that has a superior short game from 100 yards in. Because there's going to be a lot of chip shots involved because this place is playing so long. And then your guy, Carlos, he's definitely long enough. Hideki Matsuyama. I know you like him. He seems to be a player that, when he's playing well, seems to like to keep riding that wave. And he is definitely playing well right now, coming off that big win at Firestone last week. So, you know, that's just some of the storylines, Carlos, that I was looking at, or some of the players that I think are worth noting early. I know you want to talk about some others and some maybe lesser knowns and different things. So I'm going to turn it back over to you for a minute. How about that?
Sure. Let me just ask you one question just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
You say that Jordan Spieth is not long enough. Wait. Agree on that. Gotcha. But then you say that Zach Johnson and Steve Stricker, who have obviously outstanding short games, are there. But they're in the same way, I would say, the same length as Jordan Spieth. And I think that Jordan has a great short game as well. So just out of curiosity, what is the difference then that you used to qualify that and discard Jordan but then give Zach and Steve the vote of confidence in that way?
I'm gonna tell you why. And you can poo-poo this if you want to. But Zach Johnson, Zach Johnson and Steve Stricker accept their limitations. Okay? Jordan still gets pissed off and gets antsy on the golf course. Now, he was long enough at the Open Championship to get it done. He was plenty long enough. It was firm enough. He could roll a ball out there and he could get it done. At Quail Hollow, he's not going to be able to do that. So he's going to have to rely on that short game a lot. I really think he's going to have to fall back on it. And he does have a superb short game, especially from 60, 50, 40 yards in. He's wonderful, okay? So if he's rolling the ball good and chipping it good, he could have a chance, but I think he's going to have to rely on it so much, I think he's going to get frustrated when he starts missing greens. You know, he does not drive the ball that well, that accurately, and so if he starts hitting roughs, he's not going to have a chance to hit greens because the golf course is so long and soft. He has one of the best GIRs on tour, even though he has one of the lowest fairways hit. So, but then he relies on that short game a lot. So I don't think it's going to translate that well at Quail Hollow. I think it's going to be more frustrating for him he's just not mature enough. I can't say, for a 24-year-old, he's tremendously mature, okay? without question. And he's fun to watch. I love him to death. But I don't think – I hope he proves me wrong, but I don't think he's going to win this week. And I think the short game – I think not being able to get the greens is going to be a problem.
I have to agree. Yeah. I have to agree. I can't after that explanation, yeah, I have to agree. I think that there's going to be a lot of problems. I mean, when he won the U.S. Open, like you said, it's also a different course. It was made for – it had a lot of places where he can roll the ball. It had a lot of height difference because there were a lot of high places where he could use the wind to drive the ball farther than he would usually do it.
Yes.
So basically it was playing to his strengths. Not to his strengths, but it was really hiding his weaknesses. And he was able to, not weaknesses, but maybe his low points. So he was able to really take good advantage there for the U.S. Open. But here I think he needs more because the ball, other than the greens, is not going to be rolling unless you really, really hit it well. So we'll see. But anyway, let's talk about our picks now. Let's go about our dark horses, which is the second tier of players other than the top that we think could win. I'm going to give you my top five, and it was really difficult to pick them, but I'm going to go really one that I have been avoided, but I think it's really convinced me that he's playing really well is Ian Poulter. He was third to Rory McIlroy at the 2012 PGA at Kiawah Island. He also showed his major credentials when challenging at Royal Birkdale last month before finishing T14th. I mean, he's showing his liking for the spotlight again. He's healthy, and when runner-up there at Sawgrass in May, so he's always one to consider in the elite events and display his hot form with third place in Canada two weeks ago. He has already a top five. It was a long time ago here in Quail Hollow. That's in 2009 from his penultimate start here, but he hasn't played much at Quail Hollow, so he does have the form to play well here. Obviously, it's a different course today, but he's one that relies a lot on his psyche, and this is a guy that if he can get hot, and he's been playing well, so he's gaining that confidence back again, he could be there to win it. Lee Westwood, with two top fives in his last three starts here, which were in 2012 and 2013, he's one of those course horses in the European camp, and is he the same player 4 years ago, Ando? Probably not, but don't dismiss him too lightly, as he's made the cut in all three majors this year. So he's somebody that's always there, and with his experience and good results here, he could be there at the end. Now, three that might surprise you, and I'm sure they're going to surprise you. Daniel Berger, he's another of the outstanding batch of young American superstars. I know you. You have said it, he may not possess a classic golf swing, but he definitely has the X factor. And he's growing in confidence with every passing week. He's also in a rich vein of form and could just surprise a few people. You know, he's a dark horse who could easily become a front runner, and Quail Hollow could be made for him. This name, I want you to note it down and write it because you're going to hear from him a lot, and he's been improving a ton. His name is Xander Schauffele. This kid has all the tools. I've been watching him. He has all the tools to be a PGA Tour star. The San Diego State product has been playing superb golf, gaining strokes on the field in each of his last eight starts, 52.6 total strokes gains in that stretch. He is on the rise, and his recent results include top 20s in five of his last six starts and could very well make an impact at Quail Hollow with his game. Listen to it, Xander Schauffele. Not only here, listen to him, that name Xander Schauffele. He's one that you're going to be listening a lot. And my fifth dark horse is Jordan Smith. I mean, he's probably more of an adventure for the English rookie here, but he made his big breakthrough at the first European Tour win in Germany on his last start. This might be an up in class, they call it in horse racing, when you go from winning a regular Tour start. But hey, he has the confidence, he has the game, and he has been progressively winning from tour to tour, he's been dominating. He already won on the European Tour, the European Open, 2 weeks ago. He was ranked first and all around during that tournament, which is a really tough course. The only question with him and with another guy that I'm going to be talking about later is if he can manage the emotions. But the game, he has it, Fred. Which are your dark horses?
Well, you know, we haven't said anything about Kuchar. You know, Kuchar came off that tough loss to Spieth at the Open Championship. I worry that this course and the soft conditions are going to be a little bit too long for him. But, you know, he has an all-around really good game. He has an excellent short game. So this could be a great bounce back for Matt Kuchar. I'd love to see that. A kid that has a length, and I'm going to put him in the same class. You know, you brought Daniel Berger, and I. Anytime I think of Daniel Berger or I think of Justin Thomas, I think of the other. Okay, to me they're like interchangeable. I think Justin Thomas maybe is a little bit better at this point. I think they're the same age, but and they play so much alike. Berger's swing is a little bit more disjointed than Thomas, but they both swing so hard, and so he has a length. I just worry, does he have the patience to win a major? You know, a lot of times a major wins you. You let the other guys make the mistakes. Thomas, you know, he's a young guy. He may want to try and fire at pins, and that's not always the thing to do in a major. This is my veteran pick, and I'm doing it just really because I like the guy so much, and I just want him to win so bad. But Steve Stricker, he's my veteran. He still needs a major. This is the easiest one to win. He's been playing very well this year, and he has a good history here. You know, he just needs to dig down deep and find a way to get it done. He could do this. He could win at Quail Hollow. And then kind of a local guy, I mentioned it earlier, Webb Simpson, he has good history. You know, he lives here. This is a home game for him. Length may be a problem, but, you know, he won at Olympic Club. Olympic Club was playing longer than Devil, and it was hilly. And he had a tremendous short game and just kept chipping it close and making putts. So maybe if he can do that at Quail Hollow, he can be in there. And then, you know, kind of a dark, dark horse from way back in the field, maybe Patrick Rogers. He's had a pretty good year. He's playing at a high level again, and he has good vibes. He had that runner-up a few years ago. So, you know, talking about top Europeans, funny, but I have Ian Poulter on my list too. You know, I think it's a link thing. I think the link is really going to sort out the players at Quail Hollow because of the soft conditions. But Ian's been playing really, really well this year. And if that putter gets like Ryder Cup hot for him, he could maybe get it done. You know, wouldn't it be ironic if Ian Poulter won a major before Lee Westwood? But also from the European side, I like Paul Casey. I love Thomas Peters. He has the length. He seems to have the moxie. He seems to have the all-around game. He could be a factor. And he had a solid week last week at Firestone. So, Carlos, that's my guys, you know, my dark horses that I have.
Okay, I get you. And Webb Simpson, definitely, that is a guy that, I mean, there would be nothing like rolling out to your home club with a series of positive results. And he definitely, one thing that is perhaps the most impressive statistically for him going into this is that he's fourth on the PGA Tour in scrambling. And that is going to be very well needed here. So when he's hitting the greens, he's one to watch, definitely. So that's a good pick there. Hey, let's talk about our favorites now. And you mentioned, I'm going to say my five from the five to the one. I'm going to say the five, and you already talked about him, but I think I've been picking him a lot in the dark horses, but I'm going to move him now to the favorites, and that's Thomas Peters. I mean, he's big hitting. He seems to love the big game. I mean, he was there last week on the WGC Bridgestone. He just had a very bad final round, but he's getting it together. I mean, after adding to the feat of being top point scorer in the Ryder Cups in his debut, he has posted a fourth at the Masters and top five in the WGC events there in Mexico and now in Ohio. His T4 at Bridgestone carried an air of disappointment after he co-led after 54 holes, but was still another standout performance. Negative is that he struggled so far in the Bermuda Greens this season, and that's what he will face at Quail Hollow. But we'll see. I mean, I think he's learning. He's getting there. So that's my fifth pick to win this this tournament. My fourth is I still got to stick with him, and I hope he tames his temperament down, and that's John Rahm. I mean, he's a big mudding course. Like, this one should be a great fit for him. He's 16th in driving distance, and that is because he should hit more fairways. But he really can bum it. I mean, he's 30th for greens in regulation this year. You might just remember this, and this is why I like him this week. He won his first PGA Tour win in another 7,600 track. That was Torrey Pines South at the start of the season. And only last month, he blitzed the field to win on the Irish Open. I mean, he's been a little quiet since, but he has done a lot of good starts this year. And I think that this one, if he can tame his temperament, he will be there. But I'll be talking about the pairings. And he's paired with a pairing that in that first 2 days will either make him or break him. So we'll see what happens there. But he's my fourth pick. I'm going to give you my third choice. And my third choice is going to be Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, I got to give him, he's the Race to Dubai leader. I'm still expecting a good outing from him. I mean, he's just cooling off a little bit. He's like on and off, but he got a T27 there at Roger Bergsdale, T28 at Firestone. But he's one of those younger eras who will be seeing this venue for the first time. But given the changes, that could not be a bad thing for him, because this is exactly the way, the kind of course. I mean, just remember, he was fourth, an excellent fourth in the U.S. Open in the 7,700-yard Erin Hills, so he can certainly handle a long major track. And since then, you know, he's won in the Open de France, which is another long course. So this one might fit with him. My number two, and yes, I'm not picking Sergio Garcia. I'm going to say it now. I think this one is not for him. But number two, I got to go with the horse for the course, and that's Rory McIlroy. We already talked about his success here. I think he really has what it takes, and he's really rolling to form. And he's the guy to beat. I think he's there along with my other pick, which has to be, of course, Hideki Matsuyama. He's back. He's ready. He likes this. I mean, just remember, you were talking about long hitters. This Sunday, he was averaging a whooping 335.5 yards off the tee, and he hit 16 of 18 greens in regulation. I mean, he led the field all week in strokes gained to tee to green, and he is in form. He's back to that form that he was from September to February, and that's what I think is going to happen. It's going to come down to Hideki and Rory on Sunday, and I know he loves and thrives on the one-on-one. He has never lost a playoff. When he has played it, if this goes to a playoff, I love his chances. He can go toe-to-toe with Rory, and he's my pick to win. I think it's going to come down to those two, Fred.
Yeah, you know, I can't really disagree with those. Well, I can, Fleetwood. I'm not on Tommy Fleetwood's bandwagon just yet. I don't think he's mature enough. He kind of showed that at the Open Championship. That was a home game for him, and, you know, I guess he ended up okay, but he did not play that well there. Carlos, I gotta go with the betters, I guess. I like Rory, but I do think Rory's got to straighten out his short game. I don't think that's the problem with him right now is that 150 yards in, he's just not doing as well as he should be. But if he's got that around, then I think he's a lock for this thing. I like Dustin Johnson right there. He's still not 100% with the back, but I think if he's 85%, I think that should be good enough to win if he's making a few putts. I like Justin Thomas. I think this could be good for him. He likes this kind of thing. His length should go well for him, so I think this could be a good deal for him. And also – you know, I keep picking him. So he's just by sheer odds, one of these times it's got to work, right? Just like you and Sergio or you and Hideki. Ricky Fowler, you know, he's got to win one of these majors, right? So let it be the PGA on a course you know and a course you've won on. So you got good vibes. Let's get this thing done. So those are my top guys, Carlos. I'm going to go with those, and I like the dark horses. You know, when you look at the top 10 in the world, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Hideki, Rory, Sergio. We haven't talked much about Sergio in this thing. You know, I think he's still on the honeymoon, so I'm not sure this is going to be a good week for him.
Yeah.
John Rahm, Jason Day is hurting. We haven't talked about Jason Day at all, but he's hurting. I just don't think he's healthy enough. Henrik Stenson just isn't playing that well. I think this is still too big of a stage for Alex Noren. And then we got Ricky. So, I think that's pretty much it, Carlos.
Yeah, there's two guys there. Alex Noren, I have been high on him, but I think he still has to prove to me that he can do it on the big stage. Alexander Levy is another European that's been playing lights out, but he's just a little inconsistent sometimes. I don't think he has the medal to win it. And Sergio, I have to agree with you. Sergio, sorry, I think you're still honeymoon mode, so this is not going to be for you yet. I think you have other things in mind right now, so I don't think this is the goal for him. Brooks Koepka, maybe we didn't mention him, but he's a guy that if he's on and he has the length here to try to win it, he could be one there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Those are just
there's
some,
one other guy.
Of the guys.
There's one other guy we haven't. There's one other guy we haven't mentioned. We failed to talk about. I had Brooks Koepka down and also Adam Scott. You know, Adam.
I was just going to talk about him.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. That's fine.
No. Go.
No. I was going to mention the name. I don't have any real explanation or anything. I just, you know, excuse me. He hasn't won a major for a while, and this could be a good place. He's been playing pretty decent, so, you know, this might be a week for him.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. That was my last name that I was going to mention that we haven't talked about. But he's definitely one that whenever, I mean, the least that you expect him, and he has length, he has a good short game, he has a good putting game. If he gets it together, he might very well win this one, or at least be there to show for good on Sunday. Now, to close this, I'm going to tell you the television coverage times. It's Thursday and Friday from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on TNT. Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. TNT. And then from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. it's going to be on CBS. And you're going to repeat that on Sunday as well. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. TNT. Then 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. on CBS. Some of the pairings that I have lined up here for you that I think are very interesting, starting early in the morning. I'm going to go on Chronicle timing. So at 7:45 on Thursday, of course, I'm going to be watching Hideki Matsuyama there and Ernie Els and Ian Poulter. I think that's interesting pairing for him, Ian and Ernie, those two veterans with very different approaches to the game. They're with Hideki just bombing them away. It's going to be interesting to see how that's going to turn out. At 8:05, as I said, I wanted to see Tommy Fleetwood. He's the Race to Dubai leader. I have to disagree with you. I think this is the course for him. I think the problem there at home, he had too much pressure from his hometown there. He just couldn't handle it. But I think out of there, very far away here, he's going to have a very good outing. Just see what he did at the U.S. Open. He's going to be at 8:05 with Justin Thomas and Patrick Reed. That's an interesting threesome there. At 8:15, Bubba Watson, Charles Schwartzel, and Paul Casey. Those are other three very good ones that are going to be there. 8:25, there's going to be Sergio, Brooks Koepka, and Jordan Spieth. That's a great threesome there to watch. 8:35, 10 minutes after, is going to be Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, and Henrik Stenson. So that's a good threesome there. 8:55, Zach Johnson, Lee Westwood, and Charlie Hoffman, who really is another guy that is playing lights out. He's doing everything good, but not winning. That's the only thing he's not winning. But Zach Johnson, Lee Westwood, and him, three good players to watch. We talked about Adam Scott. He's going to be at 105 with another with one of your dark horses there, with Webb Simpson and Luke Donald. So that's a good pairing. At 125, defending champion Jimmy Walker with Phil Mickelson. We didn't mention Phil Mickelson and Jason Dovner. Those three are going to be there. My last two pairings to watch at 135, maybe the Power Bombers are here. I mean, there's going to be Jerome. I said that John Ram was going to be paired in a pairing that is either going to make him or break him, and that's Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler. We know that Rory and Ricky like to go at it. Can John Ram keep up with them mentally? Not with his game, but mentally. Because if he starts missing shots and getting upset, he's just going to go and miss the cut very early. So he's either going to get pumped up and go try to challenge them, and he's going to look great, awesome, or he's just going to miss the cut. So that's a great pairing to watch. Rory McIlroy, John Ram, and Ricky Fowler at 135. And your guy, Matt Kuchar, is going to be paired up with Justin Rose and Chris Kirk, who came in at the last minute there for Brent Snedeker. That's going to be at 145. So any final words, Fred, before we go on to our final putts?
Yeah, I had seen the Sergio Koepka-Spieth grouping also. I like that. The Jason Day, Justin Johnson, Henrik Stenson looks really good to me. And then the Rory, Rahm, and Ricky. That's the one I really want to watch on Thursday and Friday, Carlos.
I am definitely going to be watching that, Hideki early, and, of course, Sergio. They're going to be there. And since Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, and Henrik are going to be just 10 minutes after, that's another one to watch. So definitely good pairings, great tournament. Can't wait to see who's going to win it, and hopefully – I'm going to be talking about next Tuesday about Hideki Matsuyama and his first major win. We'll see. With that, we wrap up our practice range and our massive preview. We covered everything for you regarding the PGA Championship. I think you have no doubt. You have nothing that you don't know about the PGA Championship heading up to this weekend. Fred, let's go now to our final putts. Fred, in golf, there's undeniably only one man that no matter how low he has reached, still he steers the masses with whatever he does, especially if he goes in social media. But no one's quite sure when he will come back, and that's Tiger Woods. He will come back and attempt to return to professional golf, but he's been popping up a lot in social media, and he does, and when he does, hey, it's news everywhere. He tweeted photos over the weekend with his kids and soccer superstars Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez from Miami's Hard Rock Stadium. And on Tuesday, he was spotted in a gym in the Bahamas. The 14-time major winner was nice enough to pose for a sweaty picture with a couple of fans. Woods underwent, as you know, a fourth back surgery in April and was arrested on suspicion of DUI in May, but he has since completed a private intensive program to address his pain medication management. And what is he doing now? Well, it looks like he's taking shape because he's having a good time with his kids. And we know this because he posted a photo on Twitter Friday morning, a complete with a lobster, which he captioned, "Nothing like free diving with the kids for a lobster at Ivan Albany." It was without a shirt, and he seems like he had just gone on a deep dive there and go there and get that. I don't know if he got it, but at least he was in the water. And he's looking great.
Did you see the size of that lobster? Holy moly.
Yeah.
That was enough for like four people. That thing was huge.
Yeah. That's why I say I don't know if he catched that one or not. Because that's really tough to get those things down there. But anyway, he's great to see him having fun. And he seems to be more sociable than ever before. Maybe a change in his attitude towards a better image or something else. I don't know. But hopefully all that turns out to be into a successful return inside the course whenever that happens. And my other note, how time flies. I mean, two-time PGA Tour winner Sangmun Bae will return to competition next month at the Shinan Donghae Open following a two-year mandatory military obligation in South Korea. It seems like yesterday, but it was so fast. He began his military obligation just after the 2015 President's Cup. He completed it. He's going to complete it in August 16. According to his manager with All That Sports, Bay decided this week to first play the Korean PGA Tour events in September. Fred, Bay will have full status next season on the PGA Tour under a major medical and family crisis exemption, and is planning his return to the United States for the fall portion of the next year's schedule, although, according to his manager, he still hasn't solidified his schedule yet. But really, really, it seems like 2 years passed so quick.
So no kidding, it just seems like 6 months ago, didn't it? So, you know, I mean, to take 2 years out of your career when you're that age, out of your professional golf, that's really big. So hope he comes back and does well. Hey, Carlos, one of Byron Nelson's green jackets is up for sale. If you got a couple $100,000 laying around, you don't know what to do with. If you would like to have a green jacket, Byron Nelson won two green jackets, one in 1937 and the other in 1942. He's believed to have owned five green jackets over the course of his life. This particular jacket is believed to be the earliest model still in existence. It was produced for Nelson in 1966, and there are several photos of him wearing it until the replacement was worn in the 1980s. So the current bids, $115,000, they're expecting to get maybe around $250,000 for it, Carlos. So you may want to check that out. Go to greenjacketauctions.com. You can put a bid on it. Arnold Palmer was the man who named the long par 5 16th on the south course of Firestone the Monster. Legend has it that Arnie labeled the hole the Monster immediately after butchering it during the 1960 PGA Championship when he carded a triple bogey 8. As such, he was recognized with a plaque on the bridge over the water on the hole, and it will be forever be known as the Arnold Palmer Bridge. And just for a final thing this evening, Carlos, golf is still alive in Rio de Janeiro. Previous reports of the demise of the Olympic golf course in Rio seem to be premature. An AP writer evidently has an in for the Olympic golf course that hosts the exciting men's and women's golf competition just last summer. The mayor of Rio took exception to the post and has been putting up pictures of the course, local wildlife carts, and the course on Instagram. It appears to be in playable condition. There are carts available, and everything seems to be in working order. So hopefully the Olympic course on Rio de Janeiro is in fine fiddle and ready for golfers to come down and visit.
And it's a great, great course. Really, hopefully they'll keep it that way, and there will be maybe a tournament somewhere down the line so that it could keep attracting people to that course there in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. Fred, any final words of anything before we close up the show?
Check out Back 9 Report TV on Roku if you get a chance. Also, nwo.back9mediagroup. You get the NWO golf links there, all digital magazine. We have the summer travel issue with the Michigan resorts in it. The the August issue will be coming out of NWO golf links. It'll be coming out Wednesday or Thursday, depending on when the designer gets it back to us. We're expecting it any minute. And we'll get that turned around and get that posted and get it up. We have another great resort in Michigan, right here at Battle Creek, Kalamazoo area. Gull Lake is featured on the cover. Great. They have a brand new course there called Stoughton Bray. Great golf course. So look for those, Carlos.
There you have it. Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you miss it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn, or like Fred said it, Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report. The number 9 is in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
It's Mom's Zone. Breaking news, the Fremont family declares where they're going for back to school.
The Fremonts are going with Academy.
Mrs. Fremont, why Academy over another store?
When my kids say they'll never use math in the real world, I just show them how low my Academy receipt is.
Do you have any other thoughts?
Look, back to school is a numbers game, and numbers don't lie.
Nobody starts your season with better brands and lower prices than Academy. Academy Sports and Outdoors. For all, for less. Price match guarantee details at academy.com.
It's Mom's Zone. Breaking news, the Fremont family declares where they're going for back to school.
The Fremonts are going with Academy.
Mrs. Fremont, why Academy over another store?
When my kids say they'll never use math in the real world, I just show them how low my Academy receipt is.
You have any other thoughts?
Look, back to school is a numbers game, and numbers don't lie.
Nobody starts your season with better brands and lower prices than Academy. Academy Sports and Outdoors. For all, for less. Price match guarantee details at academy.com.